Jess in with you this morning. Now, the Scone Literary Festival's Patrick White Oration is on this Saturday evening and it's officially a sellout. That might have something to do with the special guest who's coming to Scone to give the oration. It's a man who's held one of the highest offices in the land. He served in Vietnam, was awarded a military cross for his time there, appointed Chief of the Army in the year 2000, then the General, then Chief of the Defence Force, and in 2014, Prime Minister Tony Abbott announced that he would become a Knight in the Order of Australia and was sworn in as the Governor General. I am, of course, talking about the General, the Honourable Sir Peter Cosgrove, who joins me this morning. Sir Peter, thank you so much for joining me.
Look, thanks for having me on the show, and I can't wait to get back up into the valley.
And as we said, you'll be in the beautiful Upper Hunter this weekend, certainly somewhere you've been on more than one occasion, whether it was while you were still training with the Singleton, at the Singleton Army Base. Rather, you were an instructor there in 1976, went back in the 1990s, so it's certainly an area you're familiar with.
Oh, yes. Look, we went back up there in the first place. That was our first married posting. I actually got married to Lynn, my wife, when I was posted there. So as a brand new couple, we had a couple of great years in Singleton, and we got to know people up and down the Hunter Valley, up in the Upper Hunter, and any return there, like we're doing this weekend, is a very happy return.
Mm. What was the most enjoyable part of your time in Singleton? Was it when you were an instructor at the Army base? We know you played a lot of rugby in the area as well.
Well, yeah. Look, I think my military job there was really fascinating. Mm. But just right alongside that was the number of pals we made in that area. It was the very start of our married life. We were the young marrieds on the block, so to speak. And we formed some great friendships which exist today, and that means that when we go anywhere in the Hunter Valley, we're extremely interested to get together with our pals.
Mm. And throughout your military career, I guess, did you really enjoy being an instructor after, serving time in Vietnam and doing everything else that you did? Was that just a natural path for you to take, I guess?
I think it goes to the heart of trying to be a teacher. I mean, you ask teachers and they grow and learn as much as any of their students because you in some way are adopting a parental role, albeit there's probably not much age difference between you and your students, but you certainly you learn a lot when you are an instructor. And that's what I felt about being one of the instructors at the Infantry Centre. I learned probably more than any of the students, about myself and about my profession.
It's really interesting to read in the book that was released by yourself in 2020 about your time in Vietnam, and it would have been such an interesting place to be at the time you were there and how you and everyone else were going through forest and bush, for want of a better word, and it would have just been so interesting. What was a moment from when you were over there that sticks with you still today?
Well, I think the first time the shots ring out and you find yourself in combat, which particularly in jungle warfare, comes upon you generally, all of a sudden. I mean, you don't get a long lead up. You don't see little figures coming over a hill some distance away and think, wow, they're the enemy. This will happen in a heartbeat, and that's a characteristic of jungle warfare. And then without further ado, you're into it, and it is both terrifying and confusing. But ultimately, if you survive, there is the relief and exhilaration that you made it and your people made it. There's a little bit of sadness in there because it often involves the taking of life, and you don't feel any joy in that ever. You just feel a bit of relief that it's not your lot that got were killed or wounded in the action.
Mm. Did you ever think for a moment while you were there that you would end up being the Governor General of Australia? That probably would have been the very last thing you would have thought you'd be doing.
Yeah, it was the furthest thing from my mind because in those days I couldn't imagine the joy of getting through the year unscathed. Secondly, you can't imagine, I was 22, you can't imagine being 25 or 30 and to pitch your mind forward to your late 60s and be in that Governor-General office was... I'd never conceived of that. And indeed, I didn't even conceive of that when I was still in the military. I had a close-up look at the Governor-General, just like I had a close-up look at the political leadership in Australia, and you do form your impressions, but you don't aspire to that yourself. So it was not something I ever conceived of.
What was the moment like in 2014 when you walked into the Senate chamber to be sworn in as the Governor-General?
By that stage, I'd sort of internalised what I needed to be and to do, because I'd been asked by Tony Abbott, the Prime Minister, in the previous, whenever it was, October, to accept the appointment. So I've been thinking about it for months. And the other thing is, I suppose, when you're a soldier, you do ceremonials and protocol tasks of all sorts. So you're never intimidated by, you know, the ceremony. The only thing I had to think about deeply was, of course, the remarks you pass when you take the oath of office, when you stand in the chamber before the assembled parliamentarians. Up in the gallery are all the bureaucrats and other military officers and diplomats. There's the chamber is absolutely chock-a-block, and you have to make some remarks, and they're broadcast. So in that respect, that's the only thing that I believed I needed to focus on. And while the expectation was that perhaps I'd be an appropriate person, given the centenary of World War I that was upon us, I wanted it very clearly known that I would be trying to be a Governor-General for the whole of Australia, not just the military and the veterans.
Does that play into something that you quoted in your book, diplomacy is the art of letting someone have their say? Is that something that you had in the back of your mind a lot as a Governor-General?
Well, yes. I think what you wish to do is to capture the imagination of people you talk to, perhaps hold up a mirror to them. I think it might have been Zelman Cowan or Ninian Stephen, wonderful predecessors of mine as Governor-General. One of them said he believed that the Governor-Generalship entailed holding up a mirror to the people that you were in whose company you found yourself, holding up a mirror so they could look in that mirror and see themselves and get a boost from it, to understand their innate greatness and the thing that distinguished them as Australians, which was generally, most often, a sense of community and a sense of putting others before yourself. It's a wonderful characteristic of Australians, and I hope that in Scone, at the Literary Festival, there'll be a microcosm of that. There certainly will be, if I know the people of that part of Australia.
Most definitely. I'm catching up with General the Honourable Sir Peter Cosgrove this morning. You will be in Scone this weekend. It's off the back of also your latest book, You Shouldn't Have Joined, released last year. Why did you call it You Shouldn't Have Joined?
It's an old army saying. It's only part of that saying. Let's imagine in front of you now in the studio, if you can just cram them in there, 50 young soldiers, men and women, who are waiting with trepidation for their senior person, probably a warrant officer, to come before them and tell them what their jobs are for the day. And they're not looking forward to it because the jobs probably won't be all that wonderful, won't be all that attractive and easy. So they're anticipating being a bit disappointed in a few moments. And here comes the company sergeant major, and he gives them their tasks, and their fears are realised. They've got the ordinary run of mundane and probably arduous tasks. So their jaws are dropping a little. And he looks them in the eye, and he says, in that craggy voice that they have, you shouldn't have joined if you can't take a joke. What he's saying to them is, we're the army. We do tough things. We don't often love them, but we do them because that's why we joined. Somebody has to do them. So it's an ironic saying, and I think it signals that the army is there to serve.
Definitely. I'm very much looking forward to hearing you speak at the Patrick White Oration in Scone on the weekend, and I have a feeling that should there be time for questions, you might just be asked about the Royal Family. Of course, they're in the headlines at the moment. When it comes to Australia and our relationship with the monarchy, do you think that we will ever be a republic? I personally quite love the fact that we have a relationship with the monarchy. That's my personal opinion. I think it's great. And of course, being the Governor-General, you had a relationship with them. That was part of your role. Do you think things are going to change in Australia when it comes to the monarchy?
It's hard to say. It's hard to say. It's not on the... at the moment, it gets a bit of a run because of the present issues of publicity concerning the royal family. But generally speaking, we've got a higher priorities, and there are things like economy, COVID, the plight of people on the land, how we sustain our energy aspirations when we're trying to have cleaner energy. So all of those things, they're big ticket items, and they don't go away for us. I dare say somewhere in there is also a republic or a question of whether we maintain our links with the monarchy. But that'll be down the track, I feel. We're not going to be confronted with that in the very short term. I will make some remarks about that on Saturday night, but my remarks will be more about what system shall we have. Let's not just emotionally rush out one solution or another. Let's consider what system we want to go forward with. How do we govern ourselves into the indefinite future? So that's the sort of thing I'll talk about as a particular topic, and I expect I'll get some questions on what we've all seen in the news recently. And all I will say to you here, and it's to you and your listeners to perhaps even do in your further discussions during the day, they're in the position of living perpetually in a glass house. We can see through the windows. The windows are open to us. They're like any other family, and if anybody's family is so perfect as to be able to live in a glass house, good luck to them. So we're looking at the dilemma of being in the British royal family. That there is, you're living in a glass house and everybody sees or gets a version of what you're doing and saying.
It has been an absolute pleasure catching up with you, Sir Peter, this morning. You can, of course, get your hands on General Sir Peter Cosgrove's book at any good bookstore and online. And, of course, you'll be speaking in Scone on the weekend. And we can't wait to see you. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
I look forward to seeing you when I'm up there on Saturday, and to anybody else who's present for the Patrick White Oration. I'll be speaking in the name of a very brilliant Australian, somebody who probably could not be more different to me, but I'm honoured to speak with the name of that great Australian as part of the Oration.
Fantastic.